Stories of the Hearth features archived true stories from people in our region. The Hearth creators say stories told in community can bridge divisions and offer new perspectives. Today's episode is from 2017. Guest Wendy Wertheiser tells a story of fearlessness and vulnerability. She's introduced by host Mark Iaconelli.
Our first storyteller, Wendy Wertheiser, is a proud mother of three great kids. She's also a sixth grade teacher at Ashland Middle School. She's currently pursuing a place in the 2020 Paralympic cycling team. Her kids describe her as the easiest person to call a hero. They know everyone calls their mom a hero, but there's really no one like her. Between her career as a teacher and a mom and her limited eyesight, she goes above and beyond, steps out of her comfort zone, and excels in everything she does. This is what her kids wrote. She's fearless. Her kids could not ask for a stronger, braver mom to have as their role model. Big hand for Wendy.
Can you see me behind there? So I can't really tell you where my sense of fearlessness actually comes from. From a very, very young age, I have always been very trusting of people, very trusting of situations, very trusting of my own abilities. My parents can attest to their discomfort of wondering where I might have gone off to when I'm 4 and 5, only to find me at a neighbor's house eating a yummy snack because I didn't like what was being offered at home. And I never had any problem getting on an airplane all by myself and sitting next to a stranger and talking the whole time. And I also have always had a sense of ability and strength in my body. Like most of us, I don't remember learning how to walk, but I also don't remember learning to swim. And I don't remember learning to ride a bike. So I've just always thought, yeah, I can do it. I can always do it. I remember specifically a time I was maybe 9 or 10 years old. Do you need me to forward? I grew up in lovely suburbia, southeast Denver, great cul-de-sac. And the family down the street at the end of the cul-de-sac had just gotten a trampoline. Now, I'm not talking the cute little circle trampolines with the netting around the side that keeps you from going anywhere, or the ones that have all of the nice little padding so you don't get the metal shards from the springs or get your fingers stuck in the springs. I'm talking the gigantic 2 king-size bed rectangular trampoline. And there are a dozen of us kids in the neighborhood, and we are jumping on that thing and just frothy sweat, and it is awesome. And this kid, Brad Stotts, oh, he was such a jerk. And he says to me, he goes, "I bet you can't do a flip." And I'm like, "I bet I can." And so we were jumping, just the two of us, and he gives me that double bounce to give me just the right amount of height. And in my mind, I did the most awesome flip ever in the history of the world. But when I woke up, I couldn't breathe, and I had a lot of grass in my nose. But that didn't deter me, because if you ask me today, I'll still say, I know how to do a flip. I just haven't perfected it yet, okay? And part of that might also come from the way I was raised. Growing up, my mom was losing her eyesight. And so as a family, we all pulled together and helped each other out. So it wasn't uncommon for me to help my mom read recipes or read through the mail or spy on the neighbors or pay bills. And one time we were chatting about what it's like to lose your eyesight. And I asked her, I'm about 11 years old. I said, "So, do you think I'm going to go blind?" And she just says, and she says, "God, I hope not." She says, "This is one of the worst things I could ever imagine, giving to my kid." And she said, "Had I known when I had kids that there was a possibility that this was genetic and that I would pass it on to my kids, I I think I would have made different choices. And in my 11-year-old mind, I'm like, oh, is she sad that she had us kids? Does she regret that we're here? And I guess I should tell you a little bit about my mom. She's extremely, extremely private. She's an introvert and one of the proudest people I've ever met. She was raised to know that if you want anything in life, you have to do it yourself, that your strength comes from only yourself, and that it's okay to accept help if you need it and if it's offered, but you don't ask for help. And so for her, I think I could understand why she felt so awful at the idea that she might have given us this blindness. But at the time, I'm 11. I don't have any eyesight problems. So I went about my merry way. And in all my growing up, I didn't have any eyesight problems. I went to college, I became a teacher, I married my high school sweetheart. Life is grand, right? Remember, I have this great trust in everything's always going to be okay. And I had 3 kids. And after each of my children were born, I noticed that, yeah, I'm losing my eyesight. And yeah, it's sad. I was sad about it, for sure. But my parents had given me this amazing model of how a husband and wife support each other, how kids come together and help each other, and how as a family unit, you make it through. So I wasn't that worried. I wasn't that concerned. I just trusted that everything is going to work out. Until my marriage ended. And it was abrupt, and it was shocking. And for the first time in my entire life, I didn't trust. I was heartbroken, and not only could I not trust in other people, but I didn't have a trust in myself anymore. Because I saw myself as this broken, sad, lonely individual who's going blind. And who wants that, right? Thank God for my kids. Thank God for my kids. And thank God they're always watching. Even though we think we don't want them to, thank God my kids are always watching. And I wanted to give them a good role model. I wanted them to see that I have the strength. I can figure this out. I'm going to be okay. But I'll tell you, the trusting, no way. But I had a friend of mine, and she says, you know what you need? You need tango dancing. Let me tell you, though, if you want to learn to trust in yourself and your own abilities and learn to trust other people, go for the tango dancing. It's the way to go. So I learned to tango dance, and I started hiking, and I started making friends, and I started biking, and I started training for triathlons, and I started meeting amazing women, and I forced myself into their book club, and I just started leading this wonderful, beautiful life. And probably the biggest part of that was the biking, because I still had enough eyesight that I could ride my bike. And being out in this valley, right, especially right now, isn't it incredible? Just the colors and the wind and at least most of the smells. Sometimes the smells out in those back roads are a little much, but it's just gorgeous. And the sense of freedom and joy that I have being on a bike is something I can't really get across to anyone. And I had all these friends that were willing to just let me follow them. And I would tell them, oh, I don't see very well. And I would just follow them down the road. And it was fine, and it worked great. And I was happy. But a couple years ago, I started to notice that my eyesight is going a lot more than I thought it was going. And I got scared because to not be able to ride a bike just crushed me. So I started doing some research and I thought, okay, how can I be a blind biker? And I discovered an organization called the United States Association of Blind Athletes. They really do exist. It's out there. Tons of blind athletes. And after a little bit of research and some applying for different programs, I got accepted to the Olympic Training Center to learn to race tandem bikes. So cool. So I learned to race on a velodrome. I learned to race out on the road. But what was really fascinating was that I was training not only with visually impaired and blind athletes, but I was training with military endurance athletes. So just sit with that for a second. So these are the creme de la creme of athletes. These are men that were willing to put their lives on the line for our country. These are people that know their stuff. They're fit, they're independent, they're self-reliant, they're brave, they're incredible. So I'm working alongside and training with these people, and I notice right away that they have no problem asking me for help. Hey, can you hold my tray while I hobble over and sit down? Hey, will you hold my prosthetic arm while I adjust my jersey? Hey, will you hold my bike for me while I get on, because the thought of falling over one more time makes me want to scream. I'm like, whoa. The bravest, strongest, most self-reliant people, and they had no problem asking for help. They had no problem just opening up, being vulnerable, and saying, help me. So I came back from that experience because I won't tell you really how old I am, but if I make it to the 2020 Paralympic Games in Tokyo, I'll be 50. And I realized that if I really seriously want to do this, I have to be like those guys, and I have to be willing to ask for help. And that's not an easy thing when you don't trust very well. So I stand here with this amazing, incredible, beautiful, full life, and I think about my 11-year-old self, and I think about that conversation I had with my mom so long ago. And yeah, she gave me blindness, but she gave me her tenacity and her wit and her compassion and her loyalty and her love. And as I think about the conversations that I have with my own kids, and yeah, I might give them blindness, but hopefully I will also be giving them tenacity and compassion and grit. And I want them to know more than anything that if they want to lead a full, beautiful, amazing life, they have to be willing to be vulnerable and open and be willing to ask for help. Thank you.
You can find Wendy's story and others at jeffexchange.org or get the stories of the hearth wherever you get your podcasts. We spoke with Wendy recently about her 2017 story. She says while she didn't qualify for the 2020 Paralympics, she had a blast trying. She's still cycling and encouraging others to ride with her. Here's Wendy.
I am always trying to find suckers who are willing to get on the front of my tandem. Yeah, I'm always looking for people to do that, and it's super fun. I can't, you know, I don't have a huge pool of people that are doing it right now, but I have three or four people that are willing to get out there and play bikes with me, which is super, super fun. And I do still get out on my single bike occasionally, not quite as fast, but as long as I can follow someone and just practice my skills. You know, it's funny, I kind of forgot that the whole thing was about vulnerability and everything like that, because now I'm in a weird way being vulnerable, asking more people to come ride with me, But I'm finding, too, that those people that are attempting and, you know, learning to be a pilot on the front of a tandem, it requires them being vulnerable, right? Like, they have to be willing to make mistakes and listen to, you know, their body and figure out what's comfortable and have this dialogue together of how we can make it work on the tandem. So it's interesting. I think about that now. I'm like, oh, those people have to be really vulnerable, too. Which is probably why I still love being a sixth grade teacher. I mean, what better place to be than with sixth graders who have that incredible balance of they're still naturally vulnerable and open and willing to try anything and let their feelings show and truly be who they are. And they're beginning to experience what it is to truly be fearless and step into who they are and test the waters and figure out kind of what hat they want to wear. And that all ties into being vulnerable. So I guess it makes sense why I still continue to love teaching.